Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
Welcome to The Word Podcast. I'm David Hepworth. In a departure from our usual rambling format, we present this time the first of a couple of seasonal podcasts where some of our main contributors talk about the books, films and records they've most enjoyed in the last year. We've also got live music and talk with the Rifles. That's the Rifles from their album Freedom Run. More from them later. Word contributors are sprinkled right across the country, and at this time of the year, it seems only right to ring them up and ask them what's most impressed them this year, in the hope that it might help inspire some of your own Christmas shopping, particularly when the beneficiary is that special somebody, yourself. We begin this round Britain quest with Jim Irvin, who spoke to us via the miracle of Skype.
Well, I have to say, I haven't read as many books as I normally would in a year. Certainly haven't read many from this year. But one that I did enjoy was Alan Brown's book, Nihilism, The Strange Course of the Blue Nile, partly because I'm just a massive fan of theirs and I was sort of bound to read it anyway. And I do think it's a flawed book. They left a lot of questions unanswered. But the fact that someone had bothered to write it thrilled me. You know, that they're such a kind of a rarefied thing, and they've famously only made four records in 30 years. You know, and you do feel you're part of a very sort of small band of fans and people who might want to read something about them. So I recommend it to other Blue Nile fans sort of reservedly, because I've felt it could have spoken to other members of the band. It could have spoken to any members of the band, actually. Didn't really get much from them. Paul remains a little bit of enigma. He's taken all the material about Paul Buchanan from interviews. But it's still pretty good, because Alan Brown is from Glasgow and is a very good writer. He's given a good kind of account of the wellspring from which they came.
So that's called what?
Nihilism.
Nihilism.
The Strange Course of the Blue Nile.
By Alan Brown.
Yeah.
Okay, and what about something to look at? What about a film or a DVD? Obviously, you spend a lot of time ploughing through music DVDs for Word, but you no doubt look at other things as well. What's the thing that's most struck you this year in that line?
Well, for my Word gig, it's been a tremendous year. I think there's been some fantastic music documentaries. I mean, the one that everybody obviously mentions is the George Harrison, which I thought was pretty good. But I have to say, you know, there's only so much Beatles a soul can stand, really, isn't there? But it was nice to see it from a slightly different angle, being George's. But I think it's been rock music that's... I'm not a big rocker, kind of heavy rocker, but I've really enjoyed the DVDs about the Foo Fighters and Lemmy and Kings of Leon and Mott the Hoople. There have been great documentaries about all of those. And one thing I think that strikes you, particularly seeing the kind of the Lemmy thing, is that, you know, rockers mature like kind of cheese, don't they? They become sort of sweet and nutty as they get older. there's a kind of... just the kind of cuddliness of them is that, you know, even sitting there in his tiny flat full of Nazi regalia, there's something cuddly about Lemmy.
So that's the one you would recommend, is it?
Well, The film I enjoyed the most was the Bill Withers Still Bill, which I believe you sent me a copy of.
Oh, absolutely. We both enjoyed that, didn't we?
And that was from a couple of years ago, but it still isn't available over here, so I suppose you could kind of call it a new thing. I thought that was an amazing film. And Bill Withers just came across as the wisest, the wisest, warmest person in music, I think. Fantastic film.
Because he's effectively retired, really, hasn't he? But he...
Yeah.
How do you explain what he does?
Well, I think if I were in his position, I probably would too. I mean, if you think about it, he's written a handful of absolute standards. You know, Ain't No Sunshine, Use Me, Lean On Me,
Lovely Day.
Yeah, Lovely Day, Harlem. Those half a dozen copyrights alone will be earning him a fortune every year. He's got no need to work. He's done great work. He came to it late. He did as much as he needed to do, and he's probably sitting there going, why bother? I gather there's a sort of Salinger-like quality about him, whereas he does actually work in the studio most days, but he doesn't feel the need to release anything. And I think that's quite laudable, really.
Very definitely. Now, what about music? Now, you come at this in two ways, don't you? You write about music, but you also make music, don't you?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, my day job, if you like, is being a jobbing songwriter. I'm published by Warner Chappell Music, and I get taken around the world to write with various singers and songwriters and bands. And I've done everybody from this year, from heavy metal to Lana Del Rey.
So what about the heavy metal? Tell us about that.
A band called Hailstorm, who are signed to Atlantic in the US. Fantastic. They're fronted by a brother and sister. The brother plays the drums and the sister, Lizzie, is the singer and guitarist. And they've been doing it since they were like kind of 13 and 11 or something. You know, they're one of those bands that have started out as child performers and have just now kind of in their early mid 20s and just amazing at it. You know, they've put in their 10,000 hours and then some. As I said, I'm not a massive metal fan, but I went and saw them live. And by the end of it, you're practically kind of, it's like a kind of religious experience. You're practically kind of bowing, going, we're not worthy, because they control the crowd so brilliantly.
So you're having to write songs for them. So it's sort of like writing a film script for a particular actor, is it?
No, you do it with someone. And I always liken the gig to, like, it's like fitting someone for a suit, really. You know, you talk to them, you meet them, you find out what they want to do, and you try and provide the perfect item for them, and with them in the room, you know, so that they're contributing to it, they're doing it, they often bring in an idea, and then you have to kind of realize it, help them realize it.
Right. So you've done from that, you said, to Lana Del Rey.
I worked with Lana Del Rey as well, yeah.
How was that?
She's amazing. She's incredible. I think all the kind of carping about her online is incredibly ill-informed. She's not a product of anyone else. She's a totally self-invented art project, you know, rather like Lady Gaga is. You know, she's got a vision, and I think it's sexism, really, that people think that she wouldn't be able to do it herself. You know, she came in with all these ideas, and it was just a question of kind of going through them and picking out the strongest one. You know.
So, what was your favorite record of the year then? What's the thing you've been playing most?
Well, I've been obsessed this year by a pre-Beatle pop. I don't know why, it was some weird thing that it suddenly occurred to me that I wanted to hear Telstar by the Tornadoes and twangy beat instrumentals and things that kind of came from a different time. Somewhere this year I've been doing it for a while, just sort of gently in the background, writing a piece just for my own amusement about Moon River, mm-hmm. Which was a song that had a big effect on me when I was a kid. And I always assumed it was like an old standard. And then I realized actually it's only kind of 50 years old this year, and which I suppose makes it an old standard, really. But it's something that I can kind of remember as a child being, must have been in its first sort of flush of success. And there's something about songs from that period where the old guard are just leaving the building, and you know, Beatlemania is about to come in, rock and roll's happened. There's a fantastic sort of particularity about the music in those few years between rock and roll and the Beatles that fascinates me. And there's a great box set came out this year called 1960 British Hit Parade, which basically, I think it's 12 discs, it's every song that was in the charts in Britain in 1960. And it's absolutely fascinating.
So what's your favourite? We'll play a bit to close with. What's your favourite?
What's my favourite? That's really hard. I tell you what's fascinating about it. If you look down at the list of records that were hits that year, there's almost as many genres as there are artists. You realise that the British pop industry at that point was a real fling anything at the wall. It's all about variety. I suppose it had come out of the kind of variety halls and things, hadn't it? A lot of the entertainment business. And I suppose a lot of the young rockers just assumed they were going to go straight into the halls afterwards. You know,
yes.
They had no idea what was coming, did they? So there's just this tremendous sense of you know, there's songs by puppets and film stars, and there's film themes, and there's cha-cha-cha, and there's you know, African music, there's the singing nun, you know, there's all this stuff. It's just
so it was a rich period rather than being the desert that people conventionally talk about it as being.
Yeah, I think people forget. I mean, you've got, you know, John Barry and his orchestra, you've got Johnny and the Hurricanes, you've got Johnny Mathis, Johnny Preston, Johnny Kidd and Johnny Tillotson, and that's just the Johnnies, you know.
And it's all still there for you to enjoy Christmas 2011 if you want to.
Yes.
Jim, thanks very much for talking to us. مصطفى يا ابن سرحانة يبتعمي رعا جميع اللفي عالجيرانة لما يجي يفوق. That was Mustafa by Staffy and his Mustafas, as chosen by Jim Irvin. We now move from Hove in the next step of our travel around the country to southwest London and Andrew Collins. Andrew, good morning.
Good morning.
How's the weather in southwest London?
It's bright and beautiful.
Good, good. So, what we'd like you to do is to recommend a book, a DVD or film, and a piece of music of the year. So why don't you start with a book?
Okay, well, now I set myself a New Year's resolution at the beginning of this year, which was partly recession-linked, but I decided that in 2011 I would not buy any new books. What I would do instead is read books that I already owned, because like everybody who is a bit of a book fiend, I own a lot more books than I've ever read, and most of them I really still want to read. And so I thought this would be a brilliant way of saving money and also getting through some of the books that I've already paid money for. So I think it is, although I say so myself, a genius New Year's resolution, and I'm going to see if I can keep it going into 2012 as well. So I've been reading books that I already had. So what it means is all of the you know, roundups in all the newspapers of the best books of the year, no idea what they're on about. There's no chance of me having looked at any of them. So I'm kind of living in the past, but I actually don't mind that, because most of the books that I read are books about the past anyway. So I've spent all year reading books that I already owned, all non-fiction, because that is my want. I used to read fiction when I was a younger man, and then sort of hit the point where I thought it's time to educate myself about history, a subject I didn't do that well in at school. And yet, of course, we're surrounded by a wealth of really accessible and fantastic detailed history books. So it's perfect time for me to start learning history the last 10 years. So they're all books about the past. And the one that I'm nearly finished, which I would consider to be the most important book I've read this year, is The Path to Power. And it's by Margaret Thatcher. It's her second autobiography. She wrote The Downing Street Years first. And then she wrote this, which was basically, as you can imagine from the title, the sort of the prologue to all of that. And I decided that I needed to find out what this woman was thinking as she grew up and as she entered politics and as she, you know, fought her way to the top. What was she thinking? Because I would argue it's not even a part of political view, but what she did is still living with us today. And the mess that this country's in, I'm afraid, I put largely at her doorstep. I don't want to come across as some kind of rabid, Billy Bragg-loving nutter, but I kind of am a bit one of those. And so I just wanted to find out. I thought, well, it's her book. She wrote it. Let's see what we get from it. And I am finding it fascinating. I've nearly finished it. It's quite a thick monster of a book. And she zips around a bit in chronology, which I don't like. Once she gets into leading the party, she sort of does whole sections on different areas of policy. There's a massive long chapter about the rest of the world, and then she goes back and then forward again. It's quite irritating, but it's her way of kind of organising her thoughts, really. So there you go, the surprise book of the year. I'd already bought this a few years ago, and now I'm reading it. So, you know, this is a classic case of a book which must have cost me about 15 quid when I bought it, and I never read it. So I'm reading it now.
And you can probably buy it for 50p now anyway, can't you, really?
Absolutely. I think I've looked it up. You can buy it for £1.98.
I'm sure. So what about a film or a DVD?
Well, I've watched loads of films this year, and I've found at the end of the year it's been a really good year for British film and not a bad year for American film, which is not always something you'd be sure of saying. But I think the film that I like the most, or had the most effect on me, and perhaps the biggest surprise, was an Iranian film. By saying those words, I know that some people's hearts will already be sinking, but I'm not showing off. I saw an Iranian film that I really liked, and it's called A Separation. It's now out on DVD, if you can get it. And it's just one of those films that offers an insight into somebody else's culture. It's all too easy, I think, to get wrapped up in your own culture and the stuff you see outside your front door or on your own high street. And also, it's easy to sort of get a very two-dimensional view of other cultures, from even just reading the newspapers. But because you only ever read about the crises, don't you? I mean, that's the kind of stuff you get, and there's been plenty of those around the world this year. This is just about normal life, and in fact, normal middle-class life in Tehran, and it is exactly what it sounds like. It'll be about a couple who want a divorce. That's really all it's about, and it's filmed in quite sort of realist documentary style almost. You almost imagine that the people in it aren't actors, but the main characters are. And it just starts with the couple making a case of why they should get a divorce. And it's very interestingly set up. She wants a divorce because she's got a visa to get out of the country, and she wants to take their daughter and get out of the country. But the husband doesn't want to leave the country because his dad's got Alzheimer's and he wants to stay with him. So that's why they want a divorce. It's kind of almost practical rather than anything more kind of torrid. And the authorities say no. And it just sort of goes on from there. And so they separate, and he's left in the apartment where they live with his dad and the daughter, and events unfold from there. But it's apparently, Iranian cinema is quite sort of, government funded in a lot of cases, and therefore sort of government approved. And this was independently funded. It did very well in Iran, and of course these days, films get sent around the world at festivals, and so did very well and got a wide release here.
So that's called A Separation?
A Separation, and that's exactly what it is. It's just a couple trying to separate, and brilliant. Really, really brilliant film, moving and insightful, and you would definitely come away with a broader view of the world.
You've been listening to the free feed of The Word podcast. The full album-length version is only available to subscribers to the magazine. To sign up and to hear the rest of this podcast, go to www.wordpodcast.co.uk.